please be advised.
Spoiler alert episode. Spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler
alert.
Well,
this is it. Ready Player One spoiler.
Spoiler
and proof that you saw.
I saw. If you're watching on the YouTube, I have my theater ticket here. There was some dispute as to whether or not I was actually going to see this movie.
Mm. But here now, proof.
Proof it is. Mm-hmm. Proof there. Whoomp, there it is on my ticket.
Yeah. Did you see it in the food theater?
Man, the food theater just hasn't been lining up lately.
Oh, really?
Showtime-wise, the last couple big movies, they put them in their IMAX. For whatever reason, at the food theater, their IMAX screen doesn't have the reserved food level in it. So Cinemark does this thing.
Weird.
Well, they'll have the theater, and then there's like a balcony, and that's the reserved food level.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep out the riffraff, and yes. As well they should.
Yeah. Balconies where the opera seats are.
Of course. This is where we rattle our jewelry, as yes. John Lennon asked.
Yes, so, where you can wear your field glasses.
Yes, and exactly. And I don't have to intermingle with the huddled masses who can only eat popcorn and whatnot.
Yeah, they have to get it in advance.
Yeah, I have someone bring it to me, as was my birthright, in a luxury lounger. There's more theaters are putting in luxury recliners.
Right.
But just they don't have food service.
Mm.
So I was just going to get their pizza, but the pizza oven wasn't working.
Mm.
So I was starving and all I could eat was movie theater nachos and I wanted to murder somebody.
Yeah, that doesn't put you in a good mood for a movie.
No, it doesn't. Mm. So fuck this film.
Yeah. I was excited to see this movie, Ready Player One, or as we could call it, Easter Egg the Movie.
Easter Egg. 80s Easter Egg the Movie. 80s
Easter Egg the Movie. And it was, like you said before we get into it, we want to mention this is a spoiler episode. We'll be getting into the endings, plot points. We might mention a few Easter eggs that were in the film.
As many as we can. So if you have not seen the movie, then
you may want to wait, hold off. Or if you have no intention of seeing the movie, then dive right in.
If you choose to go forward from this point,
it's on you.
It's on you. You are taking risks.
Yes.
You are putting yourself and your moviness at risk.
But right now, let's also, before we get started, let's bang out our Patreon sponsors.
Let's bang that Patreon.
At the $50 level. We still have Katie Bagwell on her MS run.
Katie Bagwell, yeah. I hope you're raising money for MS. Good
she
for you,
is.
Katie.
And it's from Houston to Austin. It's at the end of April. The money raised will help fund amazing progress in MS research. And you can get her donation page at bit.ly/KTMS150. If you can, please help her achieve her goal. And we have the Audacity Performing Arts Project. And they are extending their Help Katie Bagwell promotion.
Well, right on.
So if you do her Bike MS fundraising and make a token donation to Audacity of $15, they'll still send you an amazing shirt and a thank you. Use their donation link, audacityperformingarts.com/donate. audacityperformingarts.com/donate. We got one more, Graham.
Oh, I love it. Mm. What do they got to say?
Supplyanddemandinvesting.com. Because planning for retirement should be as easy as planning your next vacation. It just takes longer. Supplyanddemandinvesting.com. Boom. $50. Look at all the stuff you
get. Look what you get.
Mm-hmm.
You can support your charitable cause.
You can support somebody else's charitable cause.
You can support the arts. You can support an investing thing. Whatever business you guys want to do.
Yeah.
You can pay $50 a month just to have us read a list of insults.
We would do it, too.
I would do that.
Absolutely. You know, if you're really angry at somebody, I'm like, this is worth $50. We'll take care of it. So, okay. So, Ready Player One. Let's get into it. Now, I actually read the book. Did you read the book?
I have not read the book. I tried to get it at my local library, but it was checked. It's not, you know.
Really? That was going to be in stock? No.
It wasn't going to be in stock.
The three copies that they may have had?
And
yeah.
I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah.
It's got $175 million budget.
Yes.
Its cumulative worldwide gross as of April 1st was 181. It did 53 million the first weekend here in the US, but it's going to make its money.
Yeah. I mean, you've got all the fans that read the book wanting to see it, but also you've got you know, this giant Spielberg spectacle. You've got gamers and fans of the 80s and 90s, and you really hit all the buttons with this movie. So it doesn't surprise me that it did pretty well. And I think this is also the kind of movie that's going to have legs with positive word of mouth and decent reviews and decent, and like, because it's made for the age of the internet. Like, there's going to be a million YouTube views, like, find all the Easter eggs in the movie. And I'd say, well, you know, here's the ones we found, and here's the ones. And I'm sure they're all different, too, like, because there's so many in the movie. But one of the things that the book did specifically was stick with the 80s, whereas the movie branched out a little bit. There was some 70s, 80s, 90s. Yeah, because the licensing issues alone would be insurmountable if you got all that stuff.
Licensing issues aside, I think just story-wise and thematically, it would have limited, the film would have been limited if it was just 80s references.
Yes.
You know, and
like a good example of from book to movie is that there was a whole segment with The Shining. That's not in the book. It's War Games. So that's a big difference that was in the book. So it's
right, because War Games was so big at the time
in the 80s. Yeah,
hasn't really held up.
Right.
Isn't it's a good movie. It's worth watching, but there's a lot that falls through the cracks and is left to sort of that generation. Mm. Whereas The Shining is an amazing movie to watch.
And I feel like Spielberg wanted to kind of give like a shout out to Kubrick
for sure
on that, on, you know, in the movie.
That whole scene, that was amazing. That Shining stuff, they recreated some stuff and then just made it more terrifying and with massive, you know, monsters. I mean, I love that. I love that.
Yeah, it was really.
And the picture in The Shining then became part of the Easter egg within the game, in the world.
Yes.
Which was really cool.
It was very, the movie's been very meta, like it's Easter eggs in Easter eggs in Easter eggs in Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. Like when you were growing up in the 80s, did you have an Atari 2600?
Yes.
Okay. Did you play the game Adventure?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember with the dragons that looked like ducks and the sword that was the arrow and then you were literally a dot?
Yeah.
Like kids today, they can't fathom that video games even used to look like that. Mm-hmm. like this is what is this? This doesn't even look like anything. I remember somebody had brought the Atari 2600 to school and like they hooked it up to like a TV in the science class and stuff, and this kid was all excited that he was going to show everyone the very first Easter egg. Like no, you got to go and you got to take this bridge and you got to go into this room and you got to get the dot. And then he showed everyone what it was. I'm like, oh my God, that's really cool. It was literally the first Easter egg. And then that's, you know, was the final challenge in the the film to find the first Easter egg. And it exists. It really is. It's even if you get the emulations, like if you can get the Atari collections, like for the PlayStation or online or whatever, and all that stuff is retained. Like you can go and you can literally go and play those old games on your new systems, and you could find that Easter egg if you really want to. So, but it was a great feel of like nostalgia for us, those of us that did grow up in the 80s, and it was also like kind of a great summer big action-y, popcorn-y, blockbuster-y type movie that we got in. You know, this is a June, July, August movie that we got in April, because now the studios are finally figuring out the summer movies are not just for summer anymore.
Right.
So I liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun, even with reading the book, and it was definitely different than the book, but it was still really fun. So now, someone who hasn't read the book, did you just enjoy the ride that the movie put you on?
Eventually.
Okay.
Kind of. I mean, part of it is, the movie is very much for gamers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a gamer.
Right.
So there were some definitely cool things in there that I enjoyed. But the beginning of the movie was like, and I know this is, I mean, it's sort of by design, because the ending is, oh, once he takes over the company and wins, it's like we're going to have 2 days where the drift is turned off.
Right.
And he's sitting on the couch just kissing with his girlfriend. It's like, yeah, I have a whole more human interaction, which is decent. It's just, the beginning kind of bummed me out.
But what if you don't have a girlfriend? Then what are you going
to
do?
Yeah, and then you got to go back into the drift or make a digital blah, blah, blah. Whatever it's called.
The Oasis.
The Oasis, the drift.
I think Pacific Rim. I'm sure.
So sorry. I'm caught in the spoiler ep.
Yeah, in the drift.
In the drift. Yeah. I am caught in a spoiler ep drift. It was like, wow, what a horrible future this is.
Yes.
What a dystopian, and
this is the only escape.
This is the only escape, and it's more relevant now than it was when the book was written.
Right.
Because now we have VR. Now we have people. You know, I was went out with some comics after a show, and everyone was sitting around talking and, you know, interacting. And one comic then just picked up their phone and spent the majority of the time just on their phone, not
right.
interacting with people. Mm-hmm. And later I saw that this comic had posted like, oh, hanging out after the show or whatever, and photos. And I was like, I felt bad for the person, because I was like, you have to put up this like storefront, this like facade of so awesome. And it wasn't. You were sitting there buried in your phone. You didn't really interact with a lot of people. We all were laughing and talking and telling road stories and talking about the business. And this person wasn't. And I was just like, God, and I see so much of that. I get so bummed. I live at the beach. I try to go watch the sunset whenever I can, whenever I'm home working. So I'll go down there. And
that's people, online.
Why deal with the sand in your sock when you can get that online?
Yeah, just search YouTube.
And I've put on VR, man. They're amazing.
Right. Well, now they are. You know, the first generations a couple years ago when they tried it and didn't work out as well. But sure. Now it's interesting. The technology has actually improved.
It is amazing. And would it be cool to go do something I would never normally do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. But like my greatest memories in my life, like, so going back to the beach thing, and there'll be people taking photos of beautiful sunsets, and I might take a photo and maybe post it or post it later. But for the most part, my phone is in my pocket, and but there's people who just take a bunch of photos and then they're on their phone the whole time. And I'm like, I want to tap them on the shoulder and go, hey, there's the sun setting on the Pacific Ocean. It's right in front of you.
Right.
And so this society that we currently live in, it bums me out. Mm-hmm. And
so the beginning of the movie probably bummed
me
out.
The beginning of the movie, I was just like, mm-hmm. this is awful.
Mm-hmm. This is where we're headed, the stacks.
This is the stacks, and just like, you know, the corporations have screwed us over. And there's good commentary in there about fighting that.
I'll give you a little more. This is one of the issues I did have with the film is the real world parts of it weren't quite as fleshed out as they could have been. And they are fleshed out more in the book. Like, you know, one of the examples is you don't see the police till the end. Like, are there no police in this world? They didn't show up for a bombing in the stacks, but now they show up when there's like a chase towards the end. One of the things that Ernie Klein does in the book very effectively is show basically the return of indentured servitude in when you become so crippled with debt, which most people become. What happens is...
That's not happening today, though. Everything's
no,
great.
No. But what happens is, in the book, basically, you get in debt. The company acquires your debt, and then you have to go work for that company, basically in a cube. But instead of working like in a salt mine or whatever, you're literally in like a data mine. You're like, you're in, you know, a cube. You're in front of a computer, and then that's, you know, the intention is that you'll eventually pay off your debt, but the way it's set up is that you rarely, if ever, you will, like, because you get trapped in this, you know, this never-ending cycle of debt and trying to pay it off. So it kind of set up a lot more in the book the economics of the way the world works, and also how desperate this corporation was to get a hold of the Oasis, because ultimately that's what would generate the most income in the entire world.
Yeah.
Because if you got a control of that, something that everyone uses, because the original creators wanted to keep it free so everyone could enjoy it.
Right.
But, you know, if a corporation wins the contest, they're going to own it and they're going to charge.
Well, yeah. And I saw all the parallels of like net neutrality. So they're trying to get rid of net neutrality so that.
And again, book was written before all that, which was interesting.
Which makes it good science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree, like, there was just sort of, I was like, wow, I bet you in the book that's a whole chapter and that must be really interesting.
Yes, for sure, yeah.
Like, just in the opening, he's just like, after the corn syrup shortages and the broadband wars, this is where we're at. And I was like,
we just skipped a bunch. Yeah. Like, one of the really interesting sequences in the book that's not in the movie is that Wade deliberately gets himself into debt and completely... drains his bank accounts in order to get captured by the evil corporation, the IO1 or whatever they're called. It's to go into their system because he bought cheat codes. So he hacks them from the inside, and that's how he gets past that bomb at the end. Mm-hmm. He's actually the one that does it. But the way it was set up in the book, I mean, it was very really interesting the way it was kind of visualized of like, here's the process. I get myself into debt. They come after me. I'm basically taken to a farm, a data farm, and this is how I hack the system. But they had all these really interesting... Ernest Cline put in all these really interesting flourishes of, like, when you first get to, like, your indentured servitude in these data farms, you have no privileges. But then when you're there for a while and you, quote, behave yourself and do your job well... then you get more channels on your TV, and then you get, you know, you get more access to things. And it's really, really a parallel to, like, basically being owned.
Well, it's a great commentary. I mean, it is great commentary in terms of, I'm sure that's why I would love to read the book, is because, and overall, it was a decent movie. I liked it. I had an all right time. In fairness to the film, I saw this like Monday night at like a 9:15 showing. Mm-hmm. I'd been working all day in San Bernardino on the FNX show and then drove home, and then they didn't have the food I wanted. And I was like, motherfucker. Like, I could be home.
You know, you would have gone into the Oasis if you could.
I would have just gone home and made myself a nice healthy dinner versus eating movie nachos. So it's in fairness to the film, I didn't give it the greatest shot.
Right.
I was sitting there like, God damn it, this feels like something I don't want to do. But like I mean, and there's great parallels of like of our consumer culture here in America.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Work, and you'll get cable TV.
Right. Or, you know, work really hard and then you'll get the better gloves or,
yeah,
you know.
That's it. Nothing change. You won't change your society. It's just little material things. Work hard, get a better car.
There's actually parallels to, Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. Mm-hmm. You know, you see things like that. You know, you work a little hard. Everyone's working to get, like, just to watch TV or to get the next big screens. Like, you know, they have the four walls. Like, well, you know, we can't afford the fourth wall yet, you know, the TV. And, like, you know, and so everything focuses on that, getting that next technological leap. Like, that's what everything is advertised. It's a helmet. It's a suit. It's gloves. And then when something malfunctions, it's, like, the end of the world. And, you know, everybody's putting their money into it. So
always get the new one, the new thing. And that's the thing that, like, why it sort of bummed me out a little bit was we're already in that. And I used to play video games and I had a lot of fun with them, and why I never have become a huge gamer and even have had arguments with people about this. A former girlfriend started to play a lot of video games and was like, you know, was telling me, and I realize I understand the amount of effort going into them and the amount of skill to play them, especially now they're so complex. But I was like, my greatest memories in life are not the video games I played.
Mm-hmm.
It's outside of Adelaide, Australia, I caught the longest wave I've ever caught in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stuff when we went to Japan for the first time to shoot earbuds.
Right.
You know, that first meal we went to, where we sat in that room and then did sang karaoke in there. We laughed our asses off.
Yeah.
Like, or the time or sitting in a Black Hawk helicopter in the Middle East, like, or being on the Great Wall of China, or looking at a sunset in Maui. Those are the things that stick with me the most. And none of those things are computer generated.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. I have many great memories of hanging out with friends in front of the TV playing video games, because I was a gamer as a kid. And that was like, you just go to a friend's house, we would swap cartridges, and we would have those. And I really felt like part of the movie was a walk down that lane because it's also...
And I have some of those memories, too, of like playing... The games I always play were like sports games, and we'd be at a buddy's house in high school or college, and we'd be busting each other's balls and laughing.
And those games and those times are over because the games have changed so much.
Right.
Like, you know, you don't have a joystick with one button anymore, and you're not in a room with a bunch of friends. Everything's online.
You connect to people all over the world.
Yeah,
right?
And so, you know, I remember we would play Atari 2600. We would play their Missile Command, and then, you know, you would take your turn. Your friend would take his turn. You would take your turn, and then and that's just how it worked. And we would spend hours doing that. So it's also an interesting way to see that, like, how gaming itself has changed. Like, you know, MMORGs, like the massive online multiplayer role playing games, like things like World of Warcraft, where people play online all together. I mean, that is still a relatively new thing. I mean, that's you know, that didn't exist in the 80s.
And that set up
sure.
so corporations can make a lot of money. So,
oh, yeah, because it's a monthly fee. That right. was like a whole new business model that didn't exist before. You know, it used to be you buy your cartridge, that's it, you play the game, and then, you know, you would swap them with friends, and that's it. There was never a, quote, subscription fee to keep playing the game every month.
Mm-hmm.
So now the responsibility is on the developers, too, when that happens. It's a... it's a huge undertaking. You have to make sure your servers don't go down. You have to constantly be rolling out new content or those subscribers go away because gamers are very particular about their content and about their product. So it's interesting, too, to see, like, especially, you know, the buzz on the internet, like, you know, where the Easter eggs are, what's getting people excited, what's getting people not as excited, like, when they spot something. Like, Spielberg specifically wanted to make sure, like, his movies weren't in the movie. Because, you know, who made more giant movies in the 80s than Steven Spielberg? But he didn't.
There's a big dinosaur in there.
There is a big dinosaur. That one made it through.
Which was cool. Yeah. By the way, that thing, that was cool. When they do that first time.
Oh, the race at the beginning?
The race and King Kong.
Not in the book. The race is not in the book. But that was one of the places where you go... Visually, this makes perfect sense to me why you would put this in the movie, then it wouldn't be in the book. Like you know, in the book, there's a challenge where he's, you know, playing joust with the Avatar. So visually, that would be not interesting at all to watch two people play joust on a giant, you know, IMAX screen.
The other thing, too, that I did like about the movie is when he actually meets these people in real life.
Yes.
That was the coolest thing. And I know that's like part of like showing the human connection. I think about that in terms of like podcasting.
Right.
Or even like my YouTube channel. Somebody from my YouTube channel came out last Friday to the FNX show and we took a photo afterwards. And I think about all the people that have listened to this show that we've met. I think about earbuds particularly and people that we met and how cool that was. And like, you know, Sanai... I consider her like a good friend now. She's not just someone listening to the show.
Right.
And many of the people have sort of become friends of ours in those towns, wherever we're there, you know?
Yeah.
And that to me is the cool thing. Then that's where technology and the internet can bring
can
connect people. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously the theme of our film. But like that part of the movie, I really liked. I mean, there's cool chase scenes and there's cool, you know, what's his name? He's a great villain.
Ben Mendelsohn.
He's a great bad guy.
He is.
And
he's got the Michael Shannon vibe going on.
Yeah,
for
he's
sure.
gotta always gotta play, you know. And I always think of him in Dark Knight Rises of Do you feel in charge? Where Bane slowly puts his hat on his anyway, there's cool stuff and the ending, you know, it was a very cool, nice ending. He wins. He passes all the tests.
Right.
He doesn't
sign the contract at the end.
He doesn't do it for greed.
It's a little vague exactly why. I'm like, well, wait, you won the Oasis. I could see, okay, you're not signing this contract. And that was the final test. But then Simon Pegg is at the end with a bunch of lawyers with a bunch of contracts. Sued.
So then you sign.
So you're signing. Now you're signing.
Now you're signing.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, some of the rules get a little vague in the movie where I'm like, well, what? Wait, what? Does that quite make sense? But now Spielberg said that this was his third most difficult film he has made in his career, behind Jaws and Saving Private Ryan. I can see Saving Private Ryan being really difficult to make, but Jaws, the reason it was so hard is because the shark never worked.
Yeah, the shark never stopped working. Never worked.
Yeah.
So they had all those scenes with Robert Shaw and the other guys on the, and Richard Dreyfuss on the boat just talking.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. What did Richard Dreyfuss said in an interview? Said, all we could hear on the walkie-talkies all day was, the shark isn't working. The shark isn't working. So now here's the list of directors that were up for directing this movie. Christopher Nolan, Robert Zemeckis, Matthew Vaughn, Peter Jackson, and Edgar Wright were all considered to direct this film. So I have to say, though, you know what? No one can really do it like Spielberg. Like, he really, I think he was the right choice for this, the way to make it the big spectacle that it needed to be.
Well, it needed his touch. And
like, if Nolan did it, it would have been so much darker and probably a smaller story. I think it needed
to be Spielberg, because that's sort of the 80s and the pop culture. I mean, he's a part of creating pop culture.
Yes.
And creating the pop culture, you know, medium.
Right.
You
exactly.
know, and I mean, he's helped been a part of that. So him and Lucas. And it's interesting, too, because that's why the film was supposed to come out in December of last year, but they pushed it to March so it didn't compete with Jedi.
Right.
Last Jedi.
Is there any possibility that they moved it, because it's a movie with so many Easter eggs, to Easter weekend?
That could be.
I'm not even high, guys. I swear.
I don't think the internet's put that together yet. But it's definitely, you can see movies shift around to get out of the way of other movies, and I think this was one of the times that happened.
And it's a smart choice in the sense of, like, why not pick this weekend? I think Hollywood is slowly realizing, why don't we spread out
our big blockbusters?
Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the highest grossing Marvel movie of all time, because you released it in the middle of February.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where you had no competition with anything else. So weekend after weekend after weekend, you're the biggest movie in the Cineplex.
Yeah.
Which was brilliant.
Yeah. And finally figuring out after 300 years ago.
No. Like 10 years ago. So yeah, I it was cool, and I think it, you know, Spielberg sort of had to make this film, and
I didn't realize it's his first science fiction film since War of the Worlds in 2005.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and it's doing better than The Post.
Ah, well, look at that.
So I have to say it was a lot of fun, the movies. The book is still better, and the reason that the book is better is because it goes into more detail in this world. Like, I really felt like this kind of the movie itself, especially in the real world aspects, it scratched the surface more, where we could have used a little bit more detail on how everything got the way it was, how things worked. You know, I know there's not a lot of time in the movies to set all that up, but you could have set up a little bit more and give us a little, you know, it's interesting to say, give the setting a little more character development, you know, because you have this dystopian future, you know, you want to kind of know more about it and how it works. And because all that is explained very well in the book, like, there's no doubt, like, how the economics of the world work, how the Oasis work, and why these corporations want what they want.
It's just like, we had after this war and that thing, now we live in the stacks.
Yeah, the bandwidth war.
How did the stacks happen?
Yeah, yeah.
Why are they stacked up?
Yeah. So there's definitely some differences between movie and book. The other thing, too, is the trials and the contests in the book are a little more involved. They have a little more steps to them. But visually, you know, I get it why you had to streamline it, for sure, especially the race scene. Like, I love seeing, like, the little flourishes of, like, the 60s Batman, Batmobile.
Cool. That was cool.
Speed Racer's car, the bike from Akira. Like, you know, we didn't stay for the entire credits, but I'm sure just the licensing pages alone were, like, you know, was quite a credit roll. Like, and I think Spielberg, too, to give him credit, the only one who probably could have pulled everything together as far as licensing goes. Like, if you have a no-name director, you know, people are less likely to lend their licenses to the film. Right. But if you got Spielberg, I'm like, oh, yeah, no, put my thing in Spielberg's movie. And, you know, of course, you have the whole Warner Brothers library first, and then you go from there.
And they did cool things in terms of, they go to the Halliday Museum.
Yeah, yeah, the archives.
The archives, and that was cool, and how they found information there was cool.
Simon Pegg doing an American accent.
Look at that. We need more Brits doing American accents. They're really sorely underrepresented in American film. So it's that was cool. And, you know, they it was Mark Rylance to play Halliday. And
yes.
It was Michael Keaton was dead, but was.
I know. I think he would have done a really good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you guys feel about that? Because in the trailer, even I was like, as someone who read the book, I'm like, he's not quirky enough. He's too straight.
I wasn't in love with his performance, but I didn't think it was too horrible. Like I would rather have seen Michael Keaton.
Mark Rylance is everything he does is very understated.
Yeah.
But I agree. I was just sort of like, it's hard to not go, oh, there's Mark Rylance with a wig just talking like, I want to be a nerd. So I don't know. I think it needed someone that could have brought
like his high functioning Asperger's or whatever.
Someone who had like real distinct like quirks and foibles to bring to it, which I think Keaton probably would have done. But it wasn't fine. It wasn't like Rylance took me out of it,
right,
but I wasn't
right.
like completely enamored with his.
He didn't bring a ton to it.
No,
mm-hmm.
no. I mean, I liked the Gandalf character in the Drift that would appear when you found a key or whatever.
Right, right.
That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had Mark Rylance doing the voiceover on that.
Yes.
And how that would appear and how that would show and work. That was really cool technology. You and I were talking about this before recording. Both of us almost deliberately saw it in 3D because we were like, oh man, it probably looks really cool in 3D. I bet you if you see this movie in 3D, anyone out there watching 3D, you probably went, wow, this is like the chase scenes, the King Kong,
right.
all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Dinosaur, the cars, even the dance club.
Yeah.
Probably looked pretty cool.
Right. The Shining, that scene must have been awesome when the zombies with massive axes are in the...
Right, in the hedge maze.
Yeah, in the hedge maze, just swinging down. That must have been really... That must have made you jump out of your seat a little bit.
Yeah. So, but it was a really fun movie. It was, I'll tell you, it was a movie that, you know, I was skeptical that could get made. Like, after reading the book, I'm like, oh, there's no way anybody can kind of put this together.
Right.
And they're like, oh, well, Spielberg, oh, he's the one guy that could put it together. Right. And he did. But ultimately, it was changed. But, you know, like I said, the changes didn't bother me. Like, it's just they're different. And I just find the book better. But it's still a fun time at the movies. It's, you know, it's the kind of movie that's just, it's both nostalgic and fun and popcorn-y. You know, not that the book has a ton of depth. Don't get me wrong. It's not like War and Peace, but it definitely goes into the more details of the world and how everything works, which is really, really fun and interesting. Whereas the movie just kind of glances over it to get to the next action piece and the next set piece and action scene.
Right.
You know, I thought all the actors did a decent job. Like, there was nobody stood out and like, oh, this kid's terrible or whatever. I thought everyone did a nice job. Ty Sheridan, I thought, was a good Wade Watts. I know they are working on a sequel, so we'll see what happens.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Ernest Cline said he's working on a sequel to the book. So, you know, when that comes out, I can guarantee there will be another film. Now, will Spielberg do another film? I don't know, but we'll see when the book comes out.
They will make another film.
Yeah, we'll make another film.
Who directs it?
Yeah,
that's up in the air.
Exactly,
but they will
yeah.
make it. Another one of these is being made.
Unless he pulls in, you know, a Martin and like promises the book, and then it's 10 years later and we still don't have it. So, you know, we'll see.
Ready Player Two.
Yes. And that's...
Hey. Yeah. I'll cut your mic, sir.
No, I'm not I'm not mocking you, Aaron. I'm mocking that's what the title Hollywood will pick.
Yes.
The Hollywood won't come up with some like
no. The Drift.
Gandalf and the Drift.
Yeah. And one of the reasons from the for the title of the book and the movie is that back when they had arcades, you know, I don't know how much time you spend at an arcade in a mall.
Lot.
Yeah. You would stick your quarter in and everything time it would say Ready Player One or Ready Player Two. And you would take turns on the arcade machines. In fact, there's a there's a great sequence in the book that is not in the movie, where there's like a retro arcade planet that is like, you know, made from all the vector drawings of like asteroids and right. and all the and Tempest and all those things. And that's where you go to play like the classic games. You have to go to a different planet, which is really fun. So there, you know, there's a lot of great, you know, fun flourishes and in the movie and in the book, of course. But I'm a big fan of the Iron Giant. Not an 80s property, but really fun to see the Iron Giant in the movie.
That was cool to see the Iron Giant in the movie. Also, I liked that there was a whole, you know, underground resistance thing.
Yes.
And that's who she was a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that she had sort of a, whatever, a, I don't know what that was, a birth defect, but something on her eye that she wanted to hide.
Which is, again, Hollywood ugly.
Yeah, that's, you know? I know. That's the Hollywood.
Like, that really doesn't look that bad.
Oh, wow. She looks like she's laid out on the left side of her body in the sun.
Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah, how horrific.
Oh, my
yeah.
God, cover it up.
Yeah, no one will ever find you attractive. Yeah,
beautiful young woman with stunning eyes that I would totally look into and miss what's on your face. Yeah. Yeah, it was. There was that. I did like. That was, she was well cast because, and that's sort of typical of the internet. That was a good thing of like, people put, even on social media. Though on social media, it's like everything's great, you know, life's having a blast, and they're not just like, I'm alone and hate myself or whatever. Right. No one's posting that on the internet.
Yeah, only on Facebook.
Only on Facebook. but.
And then your data gets harvested.
Yeah. Jesus. By Cambridge Analytics.
Yeah.
Facebook isn't evil at all. And so then, like, when he finally did meet her and she had this very sort of scared, like, in the Oasis, she's this badass.
Right.
And then in real life, she's sort of scared and, you know, she's strong and tough, but she's like.
Yeah, a different person. Which shows that, you know, people are. And this is a great parallel. People are different online than they are in the real world. And sometimes what happens is, like, you know, you forget that too. Like, especially when, you know, you're dealing with avatars, when we get to that level of, like, you could look any way you want or, you know, change your gender or whatever. Like, you know, who knows who you're actually talking to? So that point is made up in the movie. I'm like, yeah, that's true.
You don't know who you're talking to. But also that's in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just meet somebody and they put on a face, or not a literal mask, but a figurative mask or face, and represent themselves in a certain way to you. And you think, oh,
right,
this is who they are. And then you realize, oh, no, they're not.
No, underneath, there's somebody different.
There's a liar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did enjoy the addition of T.J. Miller's character, kind of like this weird, you know, complaining hitman that's for hire. That would also seem to collect artifacts. So that was kind of part of his job. And he would have giant skull guns. So
that was cool. So I mean, all that stuff was cool. And the collecting of the coins.
Right.
I liked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Holiday's greatest regret in life was not dancing and kissing with this woman that ended up marrying his partner or whatever.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that motivated the kid to, like...
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna
kiss the girl.
I'm gonna kiss the girl. And I was like, man.
And also, you look at Halliday and you're like, would that made a difference if you would have kissed her?
Yeah.
You probably still would have ended up with Simon Pegg.
I mean, look at yourself.
Yeah, yeah. You can barely put two sentences together.
Yeah, you have a weird blonde.
Yeah,
perm.
You're a genius.
You look like a girl from the 80s. Yeah. Like you're
weird science.
Weird science. You're weird science. That's how you say it, guy. You're weird science, pal. You know who you are. You got to create a chick online. That's the only way.
Yes.
It's the only way it's going to happen. But I like all that. And I like that made me go, oh, you know what? So I just kissed the usher. No, I'm kidding.
And then they brought you food.
I kissed her and I looked in her eyes. I said, you're better than movie theater pizza.
Yeah.
And we fell in love and now we're in the drift.
Yeah. So, any closing thoughts on Ready Player One? I think we've covered a fair amount of ground on this movie.
Go outside and live life, guys. Put down the VR goggles and go live life.
As Matt Weinhold has a joke, he said, you guys should all go outside. It has great graphics.
Yeah. Really great 3D graphics outside.
So
I haven't been able to surf in a while, and that just makes me mad.
Want
to
surf?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't. It's been cold and rainy. It's
funny. I liked that guy that was on the surfboard with the VR goggles at the beginning and the stacks, and he was like, woo, like he was on the wave.
Made me so sad.
What I loved was that, like, the way Spielberg showed that no matter what you want to do or what you're into, there's a version of it on the Oasis,
right,
which is why everyone is on there.
Right.
So no matter where you live or what you're doing, like that girl dancing around the stripper pole.
Yeah, she has a stripper pole.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man.
So the one thing I would like to get that was in the movie, an omnidirectional treadmill. That looked really cool.
I did when he was like, hey, there's someone surfing a 50-foot wave. I was like, well, see, that I would do because I'll never surf a 50-foot
right,
wave. That's never going to happen. So if I could, I could do that on a VR helmet for sure.
So it's a fun time at the movies. I encourage everyone, if you enjoyed the movie, read the book, because the book is definitely a lot of fun. Anything else you want to add?
I think that's it, guys. Love to know your comments.
Yeah, let us know.
Let them, you know, put it on the
what you guys think
on Facebook or the YouTube page. Let us know what you thought of Ready Player One, and tell us if you read the book or not, and how that influenced your viewing. If the movie theater didn't have the food you wanted, did that influence your...
And also, if you didn't grow up in the 80s, you know, and
like,
what did you think of the movie? Or did you enjoy it as much as you thought? Or do you feel like, I'm not really able to relate to this because it's...
Yeah, I grew up in the 90s. This is dumb.
Yeah.
You know?
I didn't have an Atari 2600.
This is some dumb Gen X bullshit. I don't care about this. This is like...
Yeah, you guys had your chance.
Oh, you guys didn't make things any better.
Yeah, nice work.
You're just as awful as the baby boomers.
So go see Ready Player One.
Yeah, and let us know what you think. And then, of course, only three more live tapings of the FNX Comedy Experience, you guys, April 6th.
Then you're all in the can?
Then we're all in the can. New episodes drop every Friday at 9 p.m. Pacific time if you do get FNX. If you're not sure if you get FNX, go to fnx.org and you can see if it's carried where you live. We are not going to put any more episodes online. We're trying
just the first one, right?
Just the first one. That's on the Facebook page, just to give you a taste of it. We're trying to shop the show, the series around to some places. So, so that's what's up with that. And then I'm doing a tour with Ron Placone, the Progressive Comedy Tour. May 9th, we're at the Tempe Improv. May 10th, we're at Pennington's Pub in Lake Havasu. The 11th, we're in Vegas. And May 12th, we're in San Diego. So go to grahamelwood.com.
Oh, you got a string of one-nighters.
String of one-nighters, Ron Placone and I. It's Progressive Com. So if you're a big, progressive, you'll love it. If you like big Trump or Hillary supporter, I don't know if this is the show for you.
Well, it's good you let people know in advance.
Let people know in advance. If you're like, I still think the Democratic Party's savable, I would go do something else that night.
Go see Ready Player One.
Go see Ready Player One again. So, all that's on grahamelwood.com. And there'll be more road dates this summer. I'm going to do more road stuff this summer since the show will be over.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. That is our show, ladies and gentlemen. Ready Player One spoiler ep 77. Lock it in.
Oh, halfway to 154.
We'll get there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Easter.